What is it?
It's your future. It's called a Stargate.
Chevron 7 locked.
Welcome to Walking Through the Stargate. I'm Brent.
And I'm Zach.
This is episode 204, and we'll be talking about Stargate SG-1's episode Ripple Effect.
Ooh, ruffles have ripples.
Ruffles have ripples. Yes, indeed. Friends, we're an independent podcast, and if you'd like to support what we've got going on, you can do that over at buymeacoffee.com/walkingthrough. Or you can go to our website at wtts.space. and click on the little coffee cup icon in the bottom right corner. There you can buy one or two or five or 10 coffees, however many you would like. If you would like to support the show on a monthly basis, Buy Me a Coffee calls those things memberships. You can click on the little walk you through the Stargate button at the bottom of the widget that pops open when you click on the coffee cup. So many buttons. Anyway, it takes you to buymeacoffee.com/walkingthrough. And there you can sign up for memberships. There's only one tier. It's just the general fund. It's $3 a month. If you really like what we got going on, it helps offset the cost of what we do. Thank you so much to those who contributed in any way, either in buying a coffee or the monthly stuff. And then we also have wish list items. Now, there's a couple of normal wish list items, like a couple better mics, a better mixer. But then there's also the wish list item that is really mostly for other people, unless me. When it funds, we will watch the next two episodes of the non-canonical animated Stargate series, Stargate Infinity. We will watch each one and record each episode, the reaction to each episode and post it on our main feed for you to enjoy. But it will not happen until it funds. So, mwahahaha, it has not funded yet. So I get to once more enjoy no Stargate Infinity. Can you really enjoy the lack? Yeah, you can enjoy the lack of something. Yes, I'm enjoying the lack of Stargate Infinity. That's good.
Well, if anybody, I don't know about that.
Yes, if anybody in your life needs excellent Stargate podcast content, you can recommend our show to them, and they can find us at a lot of places like Apple Podcasts and Spotify Podcasts and iHeartRadio Podcasts and Amazon Podcasts. But they should do the right thing and get themselves a podcast alligator and search for Walking Through the Stargate, and they will find us, and then they can subscribe. And every time that we post an episode, they will get it straight into their ears, just like magic.
Ooh, yes. Magic.
Magic.
It's like the science of this episode.
Yeah. If a person wants to let us know that that it is not magic, that indeed it is just a technology that's been around for 20-something years, where certain clients are just listening for any changes on a particular feed, and when that change happens, it gets broadcast, and then they pick it up, and that change then represents the call to download a file, which they do, and it is categorized in a way that is easy to find and consume. There's nothing magical about it. How might they reach out and let us know that?
So if you have figured out that magic is real, and that sometimes magic can actually be explained through scientific methods, but it doesn't change that it's not magic or whatever. Ooh. I'm not sure how then email us with your tome of the magics.
Uh-huh. Spelled M-A-J-I-K-S, of course.
Yes, absolutely, absolutely. And tome is T-O-M-E, not anything else.
No.
It's just tome.
Certainly not T-O-M-B.
No, that's tomb. Uh-huh. That's something completely different. The tomb of magics, that would be interesting too. If you have a tomb of magics, tell us where you have it.
It'd be a good dungeon for D&D.
Ooh.
The tomb of magics. Uh-huh, yeah.
Yes. So if you play Dungeons & Dragons or any other type of fantasy role-playing game and have created a module called the Tomb of Dragons, or Magics. Magic. Or Dragons.
Sure.
I mean, let's be honest. If it's a Tomb of Magics, there's probably dragons there.
Yeah, could be, probably.
Could be. And anyway, you can email us that, because I would love to see that. That'd be fun. Any case, I got off topic. Anyway, email us at walkingthroughthestargate@gmail.com. You can, of course, also talk to us on Facebook. We've got a Walking Through the Stargate Facebook page and group. You can go to their website, which is wtts.space.
Space.
Beautiful. And on our website, which is wtts.space.
Space.
You can go to the upper right-hand corner and click on the Discord button. And yes, that take you to the Discord channel of our website, unless you've already downloaded the Discord app to your phone and already are a member, which is perfectly fine. Then you can just go to the Discords.
Yep.
And then you can have fun conversations about tomes and tombs of magic.
Tomes and tombs.
Ooh. The tomes.
Tombs, tombs
the tomb
with tomes.
Of the tome of magic.
Oh, you see, ooh, there we go. The tomb of the tome of dragon of magic.
Ah, no. It's the tomb of the tome of dragon magics.
Oh, okay. Or is it the tome of the tomb of dragon magics?
Ooh.
Yeah, it's like,
oh,
a book
so
about
the tome
place
of the
died.
Tomb of dragon magics.
Yeah.
Doesn't have to be in a tomb.
No. No, it doesn't. It could just be somewhere else.
It could be somewhere else. It could be in a stronghold, for instance.
It could be. It could be in a library. Who knows?
Shh. Be very quiet in the library.
Oh, sure. But if you find a tome of mad dragon, whatever. Okay. We're done. I'm done.
So this is a Stargate podcast. I promise you, folks.
Stargate.
So for you who are new to this podcast and are listening to this episode, this is what you get from us.
Yeah.
Now, you also get some really heady philosophical conversations.
It can happen.
Like we did last week when we talked about the episode Collateral Damage. I believe it was Cree Amisk, I believe, who's like, I listened to this and I just was not in the headspace for that kind of conversation. And I'm sorry, Cree.
Yeah. They can happen. But hopefully this one will be a lighter affair.
Well, this is just a ripple effect. What could be difficult about that?
No.
All right. So shall we dig into this episode?
Yeah, let's dive in.
All right. So the episode for this episode is none other than Peter DeLuise.
Hello, Peter DeLuise.
This is the third of six directing credits for Peter this season.
Mm-hmm.
He did Babylon and Prototype earlier. The story for this episode, story credit for this episode was given to Brad Wright and Joseph Malazzi and Paul Mully. The teleplay is by Joseph and Paul. As I was listening to the commentary, they were talking about this, like, Brad had this idea like 2-3 years ago that there would be multiple SG-1s showing up.
Yeah.
So he had an idea, but he didn't have a story. So they just shelved that idea until finally we get to this season. Joseph and Malazzi.
Yeah. Yes.
And Paul and Mully.
Yes, the four of them.
The four of them. They get together, and they bring this to life. You may have noticed that the number of guest actors is relatively small.
Yes.
And that the number of sets is small as well, and
yes,
they're all standing sets. As
yes,
opposed to sitting or lying down sets, they're standing. That was a way to tell an interesting story. Hopefully interesting. We'll talk about that later.
Yeah.
That doesn't have excessive costs on that. Although,
sure,
with all of the visual effects to get all of those Carters in one room, they spent their money in other places.
Oh, sure did.
In any case, this is the fifth of seven writing credits for Malazzi and Mully. They did The Ties That Bind, Ex Deus Machina, The Fourth Horseman Part 2, and Collateral Damage.
Mm-hmm.
All right, so the guest actors. We have Gary Jones as Chief Master Sergeant Walter Radar Harriman. We have Bill Dow as Dr. Bill Lee.
Yay!
Lexa Doig as Dr. Carolyn Lamb.
Yay!
Dan Shea as Sergeant Siler.
Yay!
And we say hello again to Terrell Rothery as Dr. Janet Fraser. She's back.
Yay!
Woo! And J.R. Bourne as Martouf / Lantesh. Yay!
Sure, yay!
Come on. He was the one love interest that Sam has had this entire show that wasn't fraught with awful. I mean, there was a lot of issues going on with Martouf.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
And Sam.
Oh, yeah.
But,
oh, totally.
But you know, he wasn't creepy. He wasn't a stalker. He wasn't weird. You know, they just had a complicated past that they had to navigate. So, anyway.
yeah. Complicated. Yes, that is a good word for it. Yes.
Well, you know. when you have the memories of the person who died who used to be the partner of this other person,
it gets a little complex.
Yeah. And then, like, you're feeling feelings, but then you're also remembering the feelings that you had from not you, but somebody else, but now are now downloaded into your brain. Yep. Speaking of collateral damage from last week.
Yep.
Anyway, and then we also say hello to Trevor Duvall, who plays the voice of Kvasir.
Uh-huh.
And we have a mini biography by Trevor for us today. Are you ready?
Yes, I am ready.
All right. A native of Edmonton, Canada, Trevor Duvall spent 15 years in Vancouver's voiceover industry as an animation and commercial voice actor before continuing his career in Los Angeles. He is a prolific voice artist, having performed in hundreds of animated productions, including television movies, series, feature films, and video games. Some highlights: Rocket Raccoon in Guardians of the Galaxy, mm-hmm. Emperor Palpatine, Darth Sidious, Admiral Akbar, and Jar Jar Binks in Lego Star Wars The Yoda Chronicles.
Aha, uh-huh, okay.
These are video games here, by the way. Yes. Or things, or perhaps cartoons, animated things. Lego Star Wars Droid Tales in 2015. Lego Star Wars The Freemaker Adventures. A wide assortment of supporting characters on Netflix's F is for Family. Iron Will, Hoity Toity, and Fancy Pants on My Little Pony Friendship is Magic.
Mm-hmm.
Dookie on Cartoon Network's Johnny Test. Jace on the globally popular League of Legends.
Mm-hmm.
The globally popular League of Legends video game. Colossus on Joss Whedon's Astonishing X-Men in 2009. Mm-hmm. Dad on Disney's Kitten vs. Cat. Mm-hmm. Mu LaFlaga in Mobile Suit Gundam Seed. Togusa in Ghost in the Shell. SAC Second Gig. Individual 11. That's weird.
That's a word salad.
Yeah, it is. Mordred Payne on Dragon Booster. Aizawa on Death Note. Chang and the Maniacal Irishman Legarch on Black Lagoon. Wow, that's another word salad there. Alpha Q in Transformers Energon. Pyro in X-Men Evolution. Scourge in Transformers Cybertron. And something in Stargate Atlantis.
Gotcha, okay.
That is not for Brent's ears.
No, it's redacted. Even though this episode did give away some things in the Atlantis universe,
it did.
Yeah.
We remember we've watched through season one. We haven't seen season two.
Right.
Listen. Share some of the elements of what happens at the beginning of season two, and such.
Yep.
But Brent, as you have been so ready to say, you can forget things very easily. So
I sure
invite
can.
You to forget that
yeah.
until in about a year and a half or so, we finally get to those episodes.
Yeah, we'll get there and I'll be like, oh, right. They said that.
Right. Finishing up his IMDb mini biography, Trevor also starred as the villainous Sir Atticus Moon alongside Big Time Rush in their made-for-Nickelodeon feature, Big Time Movie.
Oh, okay. Sure.
Yeah. So his first IMDb credit came in the TV series Mobile Suit Gundam back in 1979 when he played Tem Ray and Jean in the English version of it.
Oh, okay. There you go.
There you go. This episode originally aired on January 20, 2006.
Mm-hmm.
Number one in the charts in the U.S., we were listening to Grills by Nelly featuring Paul Wall, Alley, and Yip.
I know the name Nelly.
I've heard the name Nelly.
Yeah.
And by the way, this is Grills with a Z.
Mm, of course.
You know, that's Z-R-I-L-L-S. But the Z is pronounced like a G.
Oh. I was like, wait, what? Well.
That's my old stupid humor.
That's all right.
What is Grills?
Probably talking about jewelry on their teeth.
Oh. They're talking about, there's a verse about eating corn on the cob with Grills.
I'm sure that they are talking about the joy of spaghetti.
Yeah.
With Grills.
Yep. Eating popcorn.
Oh, yeah, 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 that's fine. Eating popcorn on a date.
Oh.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. With your grills.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yep. In the UK, they were still listening to That's My Goal by Shane Ward.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Yep.
So.
Blah, blah, whatever. I mean, I agree. It was a blah, blah, whatever song, but yeah.
Well, you know. Anyway, in the box office, what are we watching? Yeah. Well, we begin our journey with an evolution of the underworld.
Uh-huh.
And then, as the underworld evolves, we realize that we've been hoodwinked.
Okay.
And now we find ourselves on a glory road to our last holiday.
Okay.
And the last holiday is on nothing less than a Brokeback Mountain.
Okay.
Does that work?
That works.
All right.
Good job.
Thank you. I tried.
Yeah.
All right. So, what was going on at this time beyond all the other stuff I talked about? Well, this episode aired on the 20th of January. On the 19th of January, there were several things going on. One, a Slovak Air Force Antonov AN-24 crashes in Hungary.
Uh-huh. Okay.
So, we got a plane crash. Yep. On the 19th, a terrorist blows himself up in Tel Aviv, killing only himself but injuring 20 people, one of them seriously.
Uh-huh, okay.
Yeah, that's not so good.
No.
Par for the course at that point in time, but still not so
good. Yeah.
It was things like that that led to things like the third season of Battlestar Galactica.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. But this is a Stargate podcast.
Yes, it's
we'll
Stargate.
We'll do Battlestar Galactica, maybe, at some point in time after we finish Stargate. Maybe.
Yeah. Perhaps. Probably not, but that's okay.
Probably not. It would be fun to do.
Let's pop that bubble later. Yeah.
but we're going to finish one project before we plan the next.
Yes, indeed.
All right. Also on the 19th, the New Horizons probe is launched by NASA on the first mission to Pluto.
Uh-huh.
You know, why you need a NASA mission to go visit a cartoon dog, I don't have any idea. There you go.
Funny.
They did it.
Funny.
So on the 22nd, a couple of days later, we have Evo Morales is inaugurated as president of Bolivia,
yep.
Becoming the country's first indigenous president.
Yep. Yep, I remember that.
And then also Kobe Bryant scores 81 points in a 122-104 Lakers victory over the Toronto Raptors, becoming the second highest game total in NBA history behind only Wilt Chamberlain's 100-point game in 1962.
It's pretty impressive.
It is. I am still flabbergasted that Wilt Chamberlain was able to score 100 points in a single game.
Yeah.
And in fact, that like, and it's so impressive, right? Because that happened in 1962, and this is 2006.
Yeah.
So this is more than 40 years later.
Yep.
The second highest is 19 points less than that.
Yep. Yeah, Wilt Chamberlain was a beast.
He was.
Now, one thing that happened, though, as you were reading through things, is that I was trying to find some other music charts to be like, you know, because I'm not recognizing any of these things. But I'm like, but I was listening to a lot of indie music at the time. And I'm like, I wonder what was the number one thing. Couldn't find it. But I went right over the top of the New Horizons probe. I was really excited for that. I watched that launch. I followed that mission. It took 10 years before it got to Pluto.
Oh,
yeah.
Well, there you go.
I was following it the whole way. I mean, I wasn't like following it. I'm here, but I'm just saying, like, reading the news updates every month for a long time, it was, yep, it's still asleep. No news is good news. So
anyway, all good.
It was good stuff.
You know, and for me, I'm glad that there are people like you who watch that stuff. And I think it's really good that we do things like that. And yeah. I'm glad to hear about what happens after the fact. That's enough for my brain.
It was really cool. We discovered that Pluto has a heart on it.
Aww.
Yep.
Love.
Yep. All it's right. Just been floating out there this whole time, being all like, hey guys, heart.
No, so it's like, yeah, I used to be a planet, but I'm not anymore, but it's okay, guys. I still love you.
Heart.
Yeah,
when this launched, it was still a planet.
Oh. Was it a planet when it arrived?
Nope.
All the more reason for it to say, I still love you guys.
Oh, no, we said that all of us Pluto fans, we're all like, you're still a planet. It's okay. We can have more than 9 planets, friends.
No, we can't.
Yeah, but then we're going to have like dozens. Yeah, okay. But then how are our elementary school kids going to learn the planets? Doesn't matter.
Nobody learns all of the names of the moons of Jupiter.
Nope. Well, those are just moons. They aren't planets. Yeah, yeah.
Well, they have names. We don't even have a name for our moon.
Yeah, it's just moon.
It's just
hey, moon.
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 I mean, come on.
Moon.
We're named asteroids. We still haven't named our moon.
Moon.
So what should we name our moon? There you go. Email us the name of our moon.
Jeff.
Stan.
Stan. Not Stanley.
No, Stan. Not Stanley. Stan.
Stan the moon.
All right. So I have a trivia thing for this episode.
Okay. Yeah, let's have trivia.
So there are lots of different trivia things that talked about how, you know, when he said this one thing over here, that was a reference to this show and blah, blah, blah.
Yeah, sure.
A couple of the Easter eggs, which are beyond this trivia thing here, is that a lot of the extra SG-1 teams that come through as they're just walking through are designed to be callbacks. There was one where it was Mitchell with like three big giant dudes following behind him, and they all had those armbands from upgrades when SG-1 had those armbands. I missed it, but they talked about that in the
I didn't notice that. I mean, I noticed they were wearing something. I didn't recognize that they were the armbands from upgrades.
But then, of course, in the background of one of the shots of the Carter room, you see the Carter with the glasses, who's just kind of a little bit awkward and all of that stuff. And there are plenty of other little nuggets like that. Peter DeLuise does show up as a uniformed airman in the background of the base commissary.
Okay.
He's apparently visible over Carter's shoulder during a scene at around the 21-minute mark. I wrote that down, and I'm like, I should look that up. And then I watched the episode, and I didn't.
That's okay. It's fine.
Yeah. All right, so this episode, we call it Ripple Effect.
Yeah.
The French call it Domino Effect.
Yeah.
The Italians call it Parallel Universes.
Yeah.
The Spanish Ripple Effect. The Czech Resonance Effect.
Uh-huh. Okay. Yeah.
Hungarian Ripple Effect.
Yeah.
And the Germans give it two titles.
Okay.
One for the DVD and one for the TV. The DVD, they call it The Ripple Effect.
Okay.
And the TV title in German was Parallel Worlds.
Not Bad Guys Wear Black?
Nope.
Oh, well, that's a missed opportunity.
But they weren't bad guys because they didn't have mustaches and beards.
Yeah, but that's a different show. This is a Stargate podcast.
Yeah, but he literally says that.
And he was wrong. Bad guys wear black.
Oh.
Okay. In this universe, you wear black, you are a bad guy.
Okay. Shall we dig into the synopsis?
We shall.
Okay. Unscheduled off-world activation. General Landry to the control room. Landry, as well as Dr. Lamb, arrive in the control room. Harriman is there. Just before the gate opens, there is a brief flash and an odd thump. Everyone is confused by the event, but no one has any idea what happened. But they receive SG-1's IDC. They're a little bit early, but that's not really out of the ordinary for the team's frontline unit, or the base's frontline unit. Harriman opens the iris, and the team walks through the gate in their customary black uniforms.
Customary.
Customary. We've seen these before. At the customary briefing, don't worry, listeners, we'll spend a lot of time of the early part of this episode in the briefing room, in case you hadn't seen enough of it yet. You know, SG-1 and Landry debrief in the briefing room.
Yeah.
Some unusual discrepancies. You know, Landry thought they were coming from one planet, but the team was on another one. Huh, okay, Jackson quips that the general must have the wrong file. There are other discrepancies as well that comes out, like Selmec appears to be alive. You know, he's alive. Okay. Braytac appears to be the leader of the Jaffa Nation. Well, that's interesting. Before anything can be resolved, there's another gate activation. Everyone to the control room to witness SG-1 wearing their customary green uniforms walking through the gate. What is going on? Fortunately, everyone has the opening credits to pick their jaws up off the floor.
Yes.
Now, since the second SG-1 arrived on schedule, came from the expected planet, and their memories of past events tracks with the SGC base personnel, they can safely assume that they are the OG SG-1. Well, not the OG OG, because that had Colonel O'Neill and all that stuff, blah, blah, blah. But anyway, you understand what I'm saying.
Yes.
So okay. So the montage of conversations occurs with SG-1 members and other SG-1 members talking to each other. You know, everyone interviews a different member of the team, except for the Carters. Nope, Carter has to interview Carter.
Yep.
We're back in the briefing room. Green team, Carter briefs Landry and the rest of the team. See, I told you we'd be back in the briefing room. We're fine. You were worried about things. Jeesh. Anyway, okay, so she explains what they know. Technobabble, blah, 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 blah. Black hole, more technobabble. Wormholes passing through singularities, breaking the multiverse, etc., etc., etc. Unscheduled off-world activation. Oh, look, the Tiger Camo SG-1 arrives. This'll be interesting.
Mm-hmm.
It turns out this universe has become the hub in the multiverse. When and whenever someone gates in from the other side of the black hole, they get funneled to this universe. More SG-1s arrive. All over the place. Here, there. There's SG-1 here. There's SG-1 there. SG-1's everywhere. They're all over the floor. All over the floor. They're everywhere. Hanging from the rafters. Oh, my goodness. Eventually, Landry introduces Green Team Teal'c and Jackson to an old friend, Dr. Frazier. Her universe is in dire straits. The Ori Plague is ravaging their Earth. Oh, no.
Mm-hmm.
But Frazier isn't the only familiar face we see. Landry also escorts another person from our past into the Carter Room, where Green Team Carter is working with Black Team Carter and a whole bunch of other Carters to solve the problem. Martouf has returned to help solve the problem.
Oh, hey.
Oh, yes. Green Team Carter and Martouf definitely have a connection. Just want to say. Anyway, eventually Black Team Carter has a solution. The Green Team and Landry confer along with Gavasser and Asgard, who's not quite as patient with humans as Thor. There's more technobabble, blah, blah, blah. They're traveling to the black hole using some science-y stuff. And just like that, the funnel to this universe will be closed. Great! Unfortunately, it would mean that all the SG-1s that are already here will be stuck here. That's not so good.
Bummer.
Frazier visits Landry and begs for more time to find a better solution to send the teams back to their universes. Landry is sympathetic, but he must act to protect this universe and this reality. And so, the Green Team and the Black Team beam up to the Prometheus to execute their plan. Everyone else has left the ship due to the extremely dangerous quality of the ship, and also they didn't have the money for all those extras. Anyway, they arrive at the black hole, but the Black Team SG-1 reveals some ulterior motive. They commandeer the ship and capture Green Team SG-1, tossing them into the brig!
Oh no, they were the bad guys the whole time!
Oh my goodness! The Green Team begins looking for a means of escape. All they have to do is outthink themselves. So, Green Team Mitchell asks to speak with his counterpart. They talk. Fortunately, the Black Team doesn't have beards, so they're not evil. Looks like Black Team SG-1 is going to Atlantis to steal the ZPM to use it to defend their Earth. Oh, wait a minute. Wait one gosh darn minute! The Black Team SG-1 planned this whole thing? Which means that they have a way to reverse this multiversal problem and return the SG-1s back to their reality. Oh my goodness.
Oh my goodness.
Neither Mitchell is able to convince the other, and so Black Team Mitchell tosses his counterpart back into the brig. Once Green Team Mitchell is back, Green Team SG-1 plans their escape. Carter can easily hotwire the brig door, and the team is free. Seems to be a major flaw in the brig technology, but that's beside the point.
That is beside the point.
They split up, Carter and Daniel going one way, while Teal'c and Mitchell truck to the next level and break into the armory there. But wait, there's a double cross! Green Team Mitchell isn't Green Team Mitchell, he's from the Black Team!
You don't say.
Man, oh, I do say. The Black Team is going to capture Green Team Teal'c! Oh no! But then, Green Team Carter and Jackson appear. It's a triple cross! You knew that we'd try something, and so we planned to trick you while you were trying to trick us, so we win! Huzzah!
Huzzah.
Green Team captures the Black Team and tosses them all into the brig. Only this time they disabled whatever it was that enabled Green Team Carter to hotwire the door, so don't even bother trying.
You don't say.
I do say. Armed with new information, Green Team SG-1 scraps the original plan and returns to the SGC. They have a plan to return the alternate SG-1s, and so, one by one, the alternate SG-1 teams return to their realities. Just before Black Team SG-1 goes through the gate, Black Team Mitchell tells Green Team Mitchell that when the time comes, to cut the green wire.
Huh.
Oh, yes. The last alternate team to go through the gate is the one with Frazier and Martouf. There is a happy, sad set of goodbyes. Landry gives them the cure to the prior plague, and they walk through the gate to return home. The end.
The end!
All right, Brent.
Yeah.
Ripple effect.
Yeah.
What'd you think?
Woof. Woof does this dog bark. Holy cow. Okay. I think what happened is that they got to this part and they said, hey, do you remember? I think what happened. They're sitting around, Joseph and Paul, and they're, you know, leaning back in their writer's chair. And Joseph probably has like a Nerf basket, like a little, like, you know, like a hands, like a softball or something. But it's like a Nerf one. He's tossing it in the air and he's like, what are we going to write about? And Paul's like, I don't know. He's tapping his pencil, tap, 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 tap. He's staring off into the corner. He's like, what about having giant parasites infect the SG-1 team and them taking over the White House? No, that's too costly. We would never get that. What about having some Ori bad guys in like black armor that are stronger than... No, we already did that. What about, and then Joseph goes, what about that one where we had like six different SG-1 teams show up? Yeah, what about that one? Do we have a story? Nah, we can figure it out as we go along. I am confident that is how it started, because this story didn't know where it was going when it got going at all. Not at all. So you're telling me that what happened here is that Black Team purposefully put some kind of energy thing on a gate in PX9 or 502 or whatever they were at originally to intentionally bump into probably any parallel universe, but one where there is a working ZPM. This is their plan. This is their plan. We're going to bump the wormhole so that we get into a universe where we can go to an SGC and steal the Prometheus and take it to Atlantis to steal their ZPM, to take it back to Earth, I guess, to go back home so that we can power the Android. This was their plan. This was their plan. So they do the bump, and I presume that they knew which universe they were bumping into, because they had to go to one where they could steal the Prometheus to fly to Atlantis, to steal the ZPM, to fly back, to get back home. It's a very convoluted plan. And in the meantime, they may or may not have realized the consequences of this action to have a whole bunch of funneling SG-1 teams just kind of walking into the door. And so instead of, like, I don't know, being all like, hi, we're the SG-1 team. What? Whoa, where? What's going on? They start dropping clues in the briefing room at the beginning. They are all like, we weren't at this planet. We were at this other planet. What are you talking about? Selmac isn't dead. But, you know, like, it was so weird. It worked really well at the start of the story, but it did not work at all when we got to the end and it was revealed that they were the bad guys the whole time. Like, that was extremely discongruous. That this was their plan all along, right? And that is sin number one. Sin number two was that this story seemed to have been built out of tropes. Half the reason why I kept saying you don't say, and the latter half of this whole synopsis, is that it was just obvious parallel universe trope after obvious parallel universe trope. The green team, black team, switcheroo, switcheroo, switcheroo. Like, the, you know, the ability for the brig door to get hotwired from the inside, as you mentioned. The, like, when the time comes, cut the green one. Wow. I don't know what he's talking about. Zach, I'm willing to bet you a box of donuts that it is going to be the last episode and Mitchell's going to be faced with the choice of disabling some device, and there's going to be multiple wires in front of him of different colors, and one of them is going to be green. How original is that? Garbage. It was garbage. So it's frustrating to be watching a show for as long as we have that is capable of telling such good stories, where they mail it in so hard like this. I think that they wanted to play around with having 15 Carters in a room, and they went from there. Like, it's like, okay, all of the budget for this episode is going to be in the special effects gag of having 15 versions of Amanda Tapping's character in one room at the same time, and we'll figure it out from there. Like, So, what did I think of this episode? I liked how it started. I really did think it was fun when it started. And then it was just so clear that they didn't know where to go. it became evident that they didn't know where to go, because I think I'm also seeing evidence that they should have done reshoots and they didn't. I think they just didn't have time or budget. I think they spent all of it on their special effects with the 15 Carters. It was in the last scene with our beloved Dr. Frazier. Like, Terrell Rothery had this look of astonishment when given the cure for the prior plague. Like, a parting gift? Like she's all cool and collected walking in the door. I saw the thing. I saw the case sitting on the ground. I thought that the scene was going to be something like, oh, we're the last one to go and we're saying our goodbyes. And we're all feeling it, right? We're all feeling it because, you know, Janet was great. We love Dr. Frazier. And I thought that Janet was going to look down and go, and thanks so much for the plague inoculation, something, right? That's all that needs to happen. You don't need to keep running with the original script where Landry picks it up and says, here's a gift. Like, Frazier was all cool and collected. Like, you have a cure for this thing. I'm about to go back into the middle of it all. And instead of being really stressed out, like, I can't believe that you're sending us without this inoculation that you have. She's all like, it's so great seeing you guys. Aw, that's sweet. What? An inoculation for me? Oh, my gosh. You didn't have to. Oh, I'm going to cry. Like, no. Like, you just had to rewrite it just a little. Just a tiny, tiny bit. Where she knows she's getting it. It's there on the, you know, whatever. Like, the case. They had the case in the storage on the other side of the base. Who cares what? You know, you don't have to walk in with the thing. Like, just that little tiny change would make that scene actually work so much better, and they didn't do it. And I think they didn't do it, like I said, because they just didn't have time to think about it. They didn't watch it back and go, oh no, that's dumb. Let's get Terrell back here. Let's reshoot it. It'll take like 5 minutes. It'll be fine. Just have her say thanks when she walks in. It'll make so much more sense. We could drop a couple lines. It'll be great. We can have more time on the hugs. Like, just hugs all around. So where are we now? Does this episode have anything to do with anything? I don't think so, right? We just had a grand time with a bunch of visual effects, and we sent them all home. And we met a new Asgard who's annoying. And I did say to myself, I miss Thor, right before Daniel Jackson said I miss Thor. So that was fun. I laughed about that. I'm obviously going to give this low marks, but it's, boy, am I frustrated. I think that a couple of choices would have made this one easily in the good middling zone, right? I, like, you know, this story probably didn't really have a chance to be very impactful. Maybe it did, but, you know, maybe not. So it probably never was going to be just amazing. But, you know, I mean, it doesn't have to be garbage. And yeah, I think that they... I think that they mailed it in. I think that this is an episode where they had to make something, and they had an idea, and they stuck with that idea, and then sunk cost fallacy got to them, and they just stuck with it, and it shouldn't have happened this way. And they didn't have the money to get themselves out of the hole, and so they aired it. It's just such a fragmented, weirdo little thing, and it's not because the story is weird. Oh, yeah, also, like, the technobabble thing. The amount of technobabble was really, really high. But the problem I found with that was that the technobabble was supposed to be the secondary part of where your attention went. Because in each time where the technobabble was really going strong, they were in the middle of a visual gag, right? Like, there was a scene in, I guess, the comics. I don't know where they were with the 15 Carters, but they were going on, and it was a solid 90 seconds of explaining things. And so... But in the meantime, you've got all the different Carters doing the different things. That's bad television. That's really bad television, because that is not being funny while your attention is actually focused over there. That's split attention problem, right? That is telling you meaningful information that you know is important to the story, but it's technobabble, so it's kind of tough to follow. But you're a science fiction fan, so you're kind of used to tough to follow technobabble from time to time. And meanwhile, your attention is getting pulled to, oh, is that the Carter, the awkward Carter with the glasses? Oh, it is. Oh, is that the, like, you know, super, like, you know, like super tough Carter with the, you know, crop top thing? Yeah, it is. Maybe not crop top. What am I trying to say? You know, like,
yeah,
whatever. Like, it was clearly set up so that your attention was supposed to go beyond the center speakers. That was the point. That was where you were supposed to be looking. So in that moment, don't try to signal to the viewer that, hey, we're talking about things that you need to be paying attention to because we're talking about the solution here. No, you have that conversation be banal. You have it be, I don't know what, you have it be about them bickering about, you know, what they should do. I don't know. You do something other than actually trying to have something in the dialogue that hints that this is important information. Like, you can't do both. You can't have important information happening while you're doing a visual gag in the background like that. Like, because I'm paying attention. I'm like, where did I see her from? And now I'm thinking about that other thing. I'm not listening to you anymore. I'm thinking about the stuff. So you can't have it both ways with that. So that was just weird. And I thought, you know, with a veteran director like Peter, it also now feels like he really wanted to do a visual gag. And so he jammed it in this spot where he thought that the dialogue was slow. Right? Like, technobabble is tough to get through it, and there was a lot of it. So, you know, he's like, oh, I know it'll spice this up. Let's have 15 Carters in a room. No, then change the dialogue because whatever. All right. I thought this was a mess. How about you? What'd you think?
Wow. Okay. I probably don't have quite the visceral reaction to this episode as you do.
Sure.
My initial reactions when I watched this the first time was, there it is.
That happened.
That happened. I really enjoyed seeing Frasier and even Martouf back.
Sure.
Especially Frasier.
Yes.
You know, and in a sci-fi way, this is a very, very plausible way, and it didn't feel like it was being ramrodded in there, right?
Oh, yeah, agreed. Yes.
You know, so you know, in sci-fi land, having multiple universes and having a whole bunch of multiple teams pop into a place is very reasonable. And there's a reason that all of those things you talked about were tropes.
Yeah.
Because they've been done.
A lot.
You know, and so within the context of that, to have the twist of getting to see some beloved characters that we haven't seen before, or haven't seen in a long time, and maybe even got cut down before they ought to have.
Yeah.
And I think for both of those characters, they got killed earlier than they ever should have.
Sure.
In the storyline. Especially Frasier.
Yeah. Yeah.
Now,
yeah,
we've already talked about that. That was, of course, because in season 7, they were expecting that to be the last season, and so, you know, they're going to kill her at the middle of the season, and then they're going to be done in, you know, 8 more episodes, and then they'll go on. And if that had been the case, it would have been, you know, that'd have been fine. But then they went on for 3 more seasons.
Yeah. Yeah. Oops.
And that changed that. Now, I will say that after having gone through several different iterations of potential doctors, they've kind of settled on Dr. Lamb, and I think that she works well for this.
Yeah, no, 100%. But
new,
there's lots of good choices, but, you know.
Right. Anyway, so I really, really enjoyed that. I really enjoyed the various gags. You know, the just the way they, you know, I mean, is it tropey? Yeah, it's tropey. But I kind of enjoyed the you know, he said, she said, blah, blah, blah. To see Mitchell and Mitchell talk on the Prometheus with each other. Apparently, that was like, that's how Ben Browder is most of the time.
Oh, yeah, okay.
And that story, incidentally, of the orange juice spit take is a true story from Joseph Malazzi's life.
Uh-huh.
By the way. I mean, there are some variations of it, but that's true. You know, so there are those things that I enjoy about this episode. It feels slow. I mean, I love technobabble, you know.
Yeah.
and for me, because I literally grew up watching Star Trek.
Yeah.
And not just Star Trek, but Next Generation, which was like the epitome of technobabble. You know, I follow technobabble as easily as I follow just about anything else, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, like, and when I hear people talk about how technobabble is so hard to understand, I'm like, who are these people that don't understand this? Duh. This is normal. This is Tuesday.
You mean you don't normally talk about the positronic networks and their bimodal crossfading abilities to ensure that the temporal paradoxes are submerged behind the Heisenberg uncertainty principle?
Well, yeah, that's Monday.
Yeah. I mean, come on.
It's not that big a deal.
You right.
Know, just follow.
Just come on. Keep up.
You know,
good.
Yeah. So, you know, I enjoyed that stuff. You know, I never gave it a lot of thought as to the amount of planning that Black Team SG-1 had to have gone through.
Right.
Through this mission. But you're right. It is ridiculous the amount of planning that they would have had to do.
Either that or they were just going to wing it, like, which is possible, but it's possible, a little.
But the way that they walk through the hallways of the Prometheus and they're like, okay, are you ready? All right, ready? Let's go.
It's go time.
Come on, it's go time. You know, they have this planned. And even from the very beginning, right, when Black Team Jackson is being interviewed by Mitchell, I believe, you know, I see Mitchell's like, there are two possibilities. Either you are who you say you are, in which case we'll do everything we can to get you home, or you're not, in which case it's our job to find out what your problem is.
Yeah.
And then, you know, Jackson's like, or there's a third option. You're not who you say you are, and it's up to us to figure out what your plan is.
Yeah.
You know, with that kind of talk, this team clearly had to know what they were doing.
Right.
And that'd be a fascinating wormhole to fall down into to sort through all of that. I do find, like back in season two or whatever, when we had the extra Carter team through the quantum mirror and all of that stuff, and then we had the entrapic cascade failure. I'm like, okay, there's an entropic cascade failure. I was fine with that. And then this episode, they're like, oh, wait a second. We need to change things so that we can discuss that. Well, apparently they're very close to who we are, so we don't have a cascade entropic failure.
Yeah.
And I'm like, really? These SG-1 teams are closer to our possible reality than the one we had from season two?
Right.
Really?
Right.
I got kind of frustrated with that. I mean, okay, I'm glad you hung a lantern on it and said, hey, everybody, we know that this is true and we're going to ignore it, but really?
Yeah.
I didn't like that. It's fine. It's trying to be a silly episode and it does it.
Yeah. Yeah.
I would have appreciated some tells in the first 10 minutes to be more clearly, this is designed to be a humorous episode.
Sure.
And they didn't give it to us.
Yeah.
Which then, you know, I mean, so like SG-1 is a show, Stargate in general, but SG-1 in particular, because that's where we're at, is a show that does a good job of doing comedy and doing serious sci-fi and all sorts of stuff.
Sure.
So we've had a lot of pretty serious, heavy things up to this point. So having kind of a silly episode makes sense. This episode, normally, SG-1 does a pretty good job of signaling early on that this is going to be a silly episode.
Yep.
For my money, this episode didn't do it, which meant that by the time we got to the really silly stuff at the end, it did feel out of place, just a little bit.
Yeah.
Even as I enjoyed it. So, now, that said, since I've watched this several times, I know that this is the episode with the ripple effect and, you know, all the people, and it's kind of silly and goofy. I wonder if I kind of sat down and says, well, this is the roller. It's like, you know, you do a roller coaster. The first time you're on the roller coaster, you're like, whoa, that's the roller coaster. And like, ah, okay. Whether you liked it or not, you know, it's just like, okay, you didn't know where it was going to turn and all that stuff. And then the second time you have a better idea. And the third time you have a better idea. And the fourth time you have a better idea. This time I sat down, I knew exactly where all the turns and corners were going to be. And so now I was sitting down to just experience it, not to be shocked or surprised by it.
Sure.
And I experienced it.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was fine. It wasn't awful. It wasn't bad. I did find myself wanting to pick up my phone and look at it.
Yeah.
You know, check my email, which suggests that something is going on that I'm not quite focused on the episode as much as it's not gripping me as much as it should, as much as I'd like. I kind of chalk that up sometimes to, I watched it early in the morning yesterday-ish, earlier than normal. And so that, you know, kind of messes up my schedule and whatnot. I don't know. It's fine.
No, I mean, I get it. I you know, obviously, I think I've signaled pretty strongly in other episodes that we've done about how, like, if the television content that I have on is in that sphere where I'm wanting to look away, like, I'd rather do something else. Like, if it's not even gripping enough for me to, which, I mean, that's not saying anything about anybody's relaxation trends or anything like that. But, you know, like, if my attention is being drawn elsewhere, well, then I might as well just turn it off. Like,
sure.
You know, it failed in that regard. It failed to provide even the baseline, even the lowest level of entertainment for me. It was just like, nope, you're less interesting than staring at the wall. So why do I even have you on?
Fair enough. Yeah, it's fine. And, you know, I mean, I don't think that there's really any philosophical elements to this episode.
No.
I really appreciated seeing Janet Frazier again. I'm probably going to give it a boost a little bit for Janet.
Oh yeah. I think that's also a piece of the frustration. I kind of feel like Terrell Rothery's guest appearance was a little wasted. I think that she had what, 3 scenes, and one of them was a pretty, you know, had the potential to be pretty powerful. If there was going to be a philosophical question asked, I mean, it was Janet who asked it. And I thought that the question was a little trite. Like, how can you determine, General Landry, which version of people are more important than the others? And I said to myself, well, he's in the military. That's what they do. Like, that is what they do all the time. We want them to be those people because we need those people sometimes, but we also want to keep that idea in check because we ask those folks to make those choices all the time. Like, this group of people is going to live and this group of people is going to die. Like, that is literally what he does.
Right. You know, and of course, what we want are people like Landry who are sympathetic to the people. You know, he has to look Frazier in the eye and say, I hear what you're saying, and you're not wrong. At the same time, I still have to do this.
Yeah.
Because I'm the one, and who am I? I am literally the one that has been tasked to make this decision.
And, you know, maybe, you know, if I wanted to retcon it, maybe that's the biggest tell that she's from a different universe, because she's a little bit floored by that response. She's a little bit like, I can't quite believe that you said that. And she's a little bit surprised that she gets the antidote or whatever, the
cure.
Thank you. The vaccine at the end. So maybe that's another tell that, you know, like, in her universe, things are different. But I felt like they could have done more with that moment, or they've done more with having Terrell on set. I think that, it just looks like they had a visual gag in mind and they just chased after it like a dog chasing after a car. Like, you let it go. Like, it's actually not working that well. It would be a far more interesting story to have an alternate SG-1 team show up where Dr. Frazier is a part of it. Like, you know, and fine. I mean, you could even have Martouf a part of it, too, for some reason. But, you know, but then if you had 43 minutes of just one team and you don't have this weird double cross thing, you just have a genuine puzzle and you don't have the episode be as much about the puzzle as it is about exploring what characters would do if they had the opportunity to talk to a person that they lost. Like, how would they engage with that? What would they say? What would they share? What would they keep back? Like, how would they process that? How would you feel if a friend of yours, a good friend of yours who have passed away, suddenly showed up? Like, right? Like, that would be an interesting story. And the MacGuffin would be, how do you get back home? And you science fiction your way through it, and you figure out a way, and you get him back home, and, you know, you wrap it up with a nice bow, and it's still a bottle episode. But you've had a minute where you had a good story. You had a moment where you give a nice, meaty, enjoyable thing for a guest actor to just chew on, right? Like, to get into. Have a good time doing it. You have a moment between your actors where, you know, the cameras aren't rolling, but they're just enjoying being on set together. You know, like, you have all those good vibes and you enjoy those good vibes, but you don't sit there and go, you know what we need? We need to cram as many Samantha Carters in one room as we possibly can imagine. Like, you let that part go and you instead focus on the good parts of the story that you kind of cooked up, and you then have a good story. And it probably costs a whole lot less money because you can still have it in the SGC. You know, you can have the whole, you know what I mean? You can still have it be a bottle episode. You know, whatever. It just,
you know, one of the things that I am learning about SG-1 this time through is that if they're looking for a comedy episode, they generally turn to Peter DeLuise.
Yeah.
Or if they want something that's just wall-to-wall action, Peter can do that. Martin Wood can also do that. So they kind of split those things. But generally, if it's a comedic episode, it turns to Peter DeLuise. And one of the things that I have relearned this time through is that Peter DeLuise is off the walls bonkers.
Yeah.
As a human being.
Yeah.
And there's not any connotation meant in that. He is his father's son.
Yeah.
And his father is Dom DeLuise.
Yeah.
Ergo himself, who basically just played himself for Ergo.
Yeah.
You know, but what that results in is, you know, I mean, comedians like that, they throw everything at the wall. And if it doesn't stick, it doesn't stick because they don't worry about it and they just move on to the next thing and they throw it at the wall. And if they're good, and, you know, Peter DeLuise is good, so is Dom, enough of it sticks that it works.
Yeah.
But some of it doesn't.
Then don't switch course midway through and suddenly try to make this kind of like a double, triple, quadruple crossy-do. Like, just keep your foot on the pedal and have the resolution of it be this, like, madcap adventure that kind of falls into place and is almost lucky, and we're going to be laughing the entire way and have everybody look at each other with their glasses askew, spread out all over the place with confetti raining down because it makes no sense, and go, well, that happened, and then walk away. Like, what's the one that everybody loves where Jack relives the same thing like 16 times in a row or something?
Window of Opportunity.
That one. You know, like, it just turned into a caper at the end, and, you know, like, you had fun while it was happening, and then it ended. Like, do that. Just go ahead and keep your foot on the pedal. Don't suddenly realize that you're telling a story that makes no sense and you got to somehow tie it together. Like, no, go all in on the this won't make sense train. Acknowledge it at the end, and we're going to have a grand time. We're going to have 43 minutes of we're just going to have a hoot. We'll just be roaring with laughter. We'll get to the end of it. We'll be like, wow, that was a ride. Okay, what's next week? You know,
see what happened with this episode is that like the actual adventure was experienced by the black team.
Yes.
And so the green team didn't actually get on board until they got to the Prometheus and realized that the black team was going to try to double cross them.
Yeah.
And it's very, very difficult to tell a good story in 43 minutes where our heroes, which are the green team, right? We're rooting for the green team.
Yeah.
In this. Green team is supposed to win. When they don't even know what the rules of the game are and have, you know, or even that they're playing a game until 25 minutes into the show.
Yeah.
That would be a problem.
Yeah. That you resolve a story. See, this is, I mean, I keep beating this drum. Tell good story. Tell good story. Because you can change your story at next to no cost, right? You can, with a subtle adjustment to what story you tell, you can set the thing up so that it's not this weird cognitive dissonance, bizarro episode that doesn't make sense and kind of is a waste of time and spent a whole lot of money and you just kind of toss it at your fans, and that's pretty disrespectful to just be like, here you go, have some garbage. And then kind of wonder, like, you know, where did it all go wrong? Like, it's like, put in effort and you will be rewarded. And you don't have to put in effort by having like a $6 billion budget, right? You back it up. So, you know, to your point, Zach, the green team didn't know that they were in a game until 25 minutes. Who says this has to be a story about a game? Like, there's the problem. Wad up every single piece of paper that you have written so far, throw it in the wastebasket, start over. Like, right? You've got yourself this weird little thing that 30 minutes into your 43-minute episode is the first opportunity that you have your good guys to kind of figure out what the situation is. Then you've told a bad story. Yeah. Start over. And, you know, it's that we can't start over problem. And I'm going to back up a little bit and just absolutely acknowledge I am not in television production. And I just get the scent of, oh, crap, we made a mistake, but we're kind of in the middle of it now. So let's pivot as best we can. And here we are. Like, you know, we have an idea. Wouldn't it be fun to have 15 SG-1 teams running around? What visual gags would we have to do to get? Let's set all that stuff up. Let's make sure that we have the budget for the video editing, because it's going to take a lot of time to get all of those Carters in one space. It's going to take a lot of thinking. Got to get this thing right. They spent all of their time in that commissary scene or whatever the room was. So the big room. That's where they spent their time. And it's very evident. They put all of their time and effort in that part. And if what you're trying to do is you're trying to have this goofy adventure where you have 15 SG-1 teams, that was well spent. Like, that part was what I still criticize the, you know, what are you doing with the dialogue at that moment? But, like, you know, that's your money. That's where you sink your money. But what ends up happening is that you end up with this like weird story that is flimsy when you start thinking about it in retrospect. And also talk about a waste of an opportunity to bring back a beloved guest actor. You know, those two things. And now I'm sitting here looking at it like, what is this? Is this, you know, I feel like I'm at the high school cafeteria and they just slapped down some mystery meat in front of me. It's just like, whoa, is this sawdust? Like, what exactly is this here? And it sounds to me like you made a mistake and you just said, oh, well, I guess you all have to live with it. I hate that. Yeah. Hate it.
So I've got two comments.
Yes.
One, this episode was incredibly long and they did have to cut a lot of it out.
Okay.
What did they cut out? Well, a lot of story stuff.
Friends, that's a red flag right there. If you've got to go to the editing booth and you're like, well, I guess the story is the thing to leave. That's a problem.
You know, what are they? And I don't know exactly what the hell they had to cut out.
Yeah.
So... You are convincing me in this conversation. what I would have liked to have seen is a chess match between the black team and the green team from the very beginning.
That would have been fun.
You know, maybe throw in a few other Ripple SG-1 teams for flavor text in the background.
Sure.
we can do that. But the first half of the episode is, oh my gosh, we've got all of these SG-1 teams. Oh, look, it's some of our favorite characters from before. Let's spend time with them. And then the last half is the black team and the green team face off against each other.
Yeah.
And, you know, I just... the black team's there on Prometheus because Carter...
Yeah, why are they there?
Well, black team Carter was the one who ostensibly figured out how to close the hole.
And again, that makes sense if they in the framework of they were the ones that created the hole, therefore they're the ones with the insight to close. You know what I mean? Like, that makes sense.
That makes sense.
The black team are the bad guys. That makes sense. But then you've set stuff up in the beginning that doesn't make sense.
Well, the question though is it's like they have sent the Prometheus into 1,000 other situations that are bad and dangerous.
Yeah.
And this is the one where you're going to take everybody off the ship except for 8 people, and they're going to be 2 groups of the same people, and your motives for one of the groups is undetermined?
Yeah.
I mean, yeah. I'm not in the military.
But that doesn't sound like a good idea.
That sounds dumb.
Yeah, I mean, right. And so... as a popcorn piece, I don't like this one as a popcorn piece, right? I'm not going to give this one high marks. I respect if you like this as a popcorn piece, right? Like, it's a thing you put on. There's some gags. Wow, that's funny. It's got Janet Frazier. You know, it's got Martouf in it. It's you know, like I can respect that position. I, again, am the person of like, I don't do that. When I want to just turn my brain off, I don't turn on a TV show. That's not me. But that's plenty of people. And so as a popcorn piece, maybe this one is all right, but I don't do popcorn pieces like that. Not that well, not that much. And so I just don't like it. So yeah.
Yeah. All right. Well, I think that we have chewed on this long enough.
Sure.
And it is time now to take your disliked popcorn piece and label it with some chevrons.
Yeah. I think I just never like it when I get the impression that I am expected to just take not that great of stuff and be grateful for it. So, you know, that whether or not that's actually accurate and what versus just me having a bias and being all like, I got the feeling that this is happening. It's there and I don't like it. The reason why I think that this is kind of a garbagey episode is because it has so many weird little flaws that could have been resolved by just slightly altering the story and maybe majorly editing the story in some respects, but like especially that last scene with Janet and the inoculation thing, like one line and a reframe of how she looks when she sees the thing, and it would have made all the sense in the world. But instead it's this weird like you were happy and now you're grateful and you were literally like seething just a second. This doesn't make sense. Ugh. And so all of those things put together make this just a frustrating experience. This is a 2 out of 7 for me. I don't like it when that happens. I can't give it good marks because of the neato special effects. I don't care. You know, hooray. You found a way to have Amanda tapping 5 times in the same set. Hooray. Good for you. What's the point? If it's literally to be like, look what we can do. Great. Good job. Hooray. I'm not that interested. I like story. What's your story? Your story's garbage? Yeah. Garbagey stuff. 2 out of 7 for me. What about you?
That was harsh.
I didn't like it. Yeah.
No. That's right. You had to do you. I think this is a very middling episode. It's just kind of in the middle of the pack. So without belaboring it, I'm going to give it 3.5. Right, okay. Down the middle. I'm giving it at least a half chevron, if not a full chevron, for the fact that we got to see Janet again.
Sure.
You know, I think it's fine. It's not awful. It's not distasteful. They were going for an episode where they could technically show a whole bunch of different SG-1s on screen at the same time and make the visual effects work.
Mm-hmm.
They did that. They succeeded at that. You know, if that's what you were going for, high marks.
Mm-hmm.
This is the 25th anniversary of The Matrix. The Matrix is a movie that won as many awards in 1999 as The Return of the King.
Yeah.
Or no, it wasn't The Return of the King.
It was, 99 would have been Lord of the Rings.
Fellowship of the Ring. But they each won, or maybe, I don't know, whatever won Best Picture that year, because it wasn't Fellowship of the Ring that year.
Correct.
Whatever won Best Picture that year, tied with Matrix. Now, Matrix's awards that year were all in the technical category.
Yeah, because it was amazing.
Because it was amazing. That. And, of course, then the other movie that won Best Picture that year got all of the acting and directing awards.
Sure.
If what you're going for is the technical stuff, you need to have a story that can hold it together.
Yeah.
I don't know if this passed on that one.
I mean, I have my opinions.
But. You do. Which is why I give it 3.5.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
All right. We have predictions. Shall we dig into the predictions? I'm really curious to see what other people have to say about this.
Yeah, episode. Me too. I bet you no one's going to guess that I gave it a 2.
I'm betting you're probably right on that. We have Dimitri.
Hi, Dimitri.
Dimitri says, hey, Zach. Hey, Brent. Been a while. Sorry I couldn't dial in. Life stuff got in the way.
All totally good. You're here now.
Totally get it. Congrats on getting over 200 episodes. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
I went down the rabbit hole, caught up with your season 1 to 2. Gold! Gold, I tell you. Thank you. Now multiply this message by like 16. Change it around a bit, and that is what this episode is about.
Uh-huh.
Same thing, but done a bit different every time. Also, can you really fool yourself? Mitchell says something like, that's what I would do, so I had to think different of me. Well,
right.
I don't think...
it doesn't quite follow.
Yeah. Well, I don't think it works like that. You are who you are, and you can't think like not yourself, because you are limited to what you are. Not sure if that made sense. It did, actually. It totally made sense.
Yes.
But still a fun episode. I predict a really good discussion from you guys. Maybe?
We always have a really good discussion.
Oh, yes. Okay. Yeah. He predicts that I will give it a 6.
Whoa. Okay.
And that you will give it a 5.
Yeah, no. Nope.
Dimitri says, see you next time. Well, great. Thanks very much,
Dimitri. Thanks, Dimitri.
And then we have Rowan.
Hi, Rowan.
Rowan says, this was fun, but I wish I could get to the alternate universe where multiple versions of Vala were in this episode. More of her and less of Martooth, please.
I'll go along too. I know we got plenty of listeners that are like, ew, no, but you know what? Hey, to each their own.
Yeah. That's all Rowan has to say. Just
thanks for that,
less
Rowan.
Martooth. Those are our Facebook predictions.
Thank you, friends.
What do we got on the Discord?
On the Discord, we've got Kriamisk. Hi, Kriamisk.
Hi, Kriamisk.
Kriamisk says, I always enjoy time traveling or alternate reality episodes. Gets the imagination juices flowing. I've wondered before what WTTS would be like in an alternate reality if Brent and Zach were switched around and it'd be Zach watching for the first time. That'd be interesting, right?
Yeah.
So his predictions are this. He thinks that I give it a 6 and that you give it a 6.5.
Wow.
Yeah. No.
No. Did not like it that much.
Did not like it. All right. Now we've got Kevin. Hi, Kevin.
Hi, Kevin.
Kevin says, hi, Brent. Hi, Zach. This is a fan favorite episode, and for obvious reasons. Oh, no! As I settled down with my pork chops and started watching, I decided I should take a few notes. 1. Did General Landry not see SG-1 before they went on their mission? Wouldn't he have noticed that their clothes were different?
Yes! Thank you. I 2. Didn't talk about it, but yes, come on.
Carter's honeymoon? Oh, my Jack Sam Hart can't take all of it, all the shipping I'm feeling right now.
Yep.
3. Ripple effect. Everybody take a shot. They said the name of the episode.
Yep.
4. This episode does an excellent job using one actor or actress and then using various tricks or over-the-shoulder shots, to convey multiple versions of the same person. Also, this is so much smoother than the previous episodes where they have tried things like this. I agree. I agree with that. That's right.
Yep.
All right. Five. Read the room, Kvasir. Calibrations can wait. Number six. If the Asgard are so smart and know more about physics than humans and already have a device to do exactly what needs to be done and get all the teams back home, why didn't they come up with the solution? It's because it's a bad story. Anyway, Kevin concludes, this is a fantastic episode that brought back fan favorite characters. I think you both will rate this a six, only because it feels like it wraps up a little too quickly. No. I did not give it a six. Sorry, Kevin.
We're gonna get some hate today.
Probably so, but that's okay. This is just how it is. Lastly, we've got Dinner Beef. Hi, Dinner Beef. Dinner Beef says, Going to keep this quick, says Dinner Beef. Janet is back. Anyway, my guess is sixes all around. Nope. Not sixes.
I didn't even like it that much.
Bad story. Bad story. You go back in the corner and you figure out what you need to do and then come back out and give Janet a proper story. All right.
Yeah, I would have liked to have seen a story that would have given her more of a
story.
A story. You know, we got to see her, and that was the end of it.
That was great. I like seeing her. I did. It was great.
All right.
That's all we got in the Discords.
All right. Well, we've got some emails.
Okay.
We have Susan, a.k.a. Aunt Susie.
Aunt Susie!
Aunt Susie says, Zach and Brent, I haven't commented in a long time, but I continue to be a faithful listener to your podcast, which is the best of all Stargate podcasts by far.
Thank you very much.
Appreciate that. Ripple Effect is in my top 10 favorite episodes, so give it 7 chevrons.
Everyone's going to tell me I'm wrong, and that's okay. That's all
and
right.
And so
that's
should okay. you. Yeah. She just told you you're wrong. High score, because in addition to seeing some familiar faces, you can never, never, never have too many SG-1 teams in an episode. My favorite team... And the coolest to come through the gate was the blue tiger camo team.
I agree with that one.
If only they had let Blue Cam Mitchell say, "What the frell?" when he came through the gate, it would have been perfect. By the way, I will say this, like in the commentary, they were talking about this. There was a scene, a bit, or whatnot, when Cam Mitchell does say, "What the frell?"
Uh-huh.
And later on goes, "What the frack?"
Uh-huh, uh-huh.
And those are the science fiction words in Farscape and Battlestar Galactica, respectively, for English words.
Yes, yes.
But as I mentioned before, there was a lot that needed to get cut for time, and they did not make the cut.
Uh-huh.
Anyway, Susan says, keep up the good works, guys. Love listening to you.
Well, thank you very much.
And we're very sorry that we cannot give this the episode rating that you were hoping for.
I mean, I'm not sorry. However, yes, I recognize that I am on the other side of the room, standing over there by myself, all bitter and scowling, and everyone's having a great time over here.
Well, and finally, we have David.
Hi, David.
David says, Chevron encoding bias buffer. Bias buffer for Chevron encoding.
Uh-huh.
Encoding buffer for Chevron bias.
Yep.
Encoding bias for the Chevron buffer. Buffering the bias for buffer chevrons. Bias chevrons encoding the buffer.
Awesome.
Oh, boy. Okay. Hi, guys. I'm sitting in an airplane waiting to take off and fly home, writing this on my phone.
Oh, okay.
I quite enjoyed this episode. Yeah. There was fun, drama, real stakes for the characters, and some old familiar faces. Also interesting is that despite universe differences, it seems like there is some things that are just going to happen, like the Ori.
Yep.
All right.
And the green wire.
And the green wire. I'm going to tell you right now, Brent, I am... 85% to 90% certain we'll never see the green wire again. So, David continues. My question for you is this. Did you think the, quote, bad guy versions of SG-1 were really bad, or were they just bad because they weren't our team? If ours had been sent to an alternate universe and behaved in their own self-interest, would they be bad guys? I don't think so, nor do I think these guys were bad. They just disagreed with our team. Okay, A, they were stealing something that wasn't theirs. Whether or not they were bad, they were acting in bad ways. Period.
Also, I'll just throw this out there. Perhaps if they had talked to other SG-1 teams or thought about this particular opportunity that they were in a little bit further, they could find a universe where there is ample ZPMs around.
I mean, yeah, so here's the thing. It's like, you're right. Like, so we didn't get into this, but this is the amount of thought that this SG-1 team had to have gone through. Okay. So we need a ZPM.
Sorry, David.
We don't have a ZPM.
Yeah.
Okay. Where are we going to find a ZPM? Well, multiverse universes. So we know that there are a multitude of, you know, an infinite number of multiverse universes out there. One of them has to have a ZPM. Absolutely. Got it. Perfect. Well, what if we were to take one of theirs?
Uh-huh.
Okay. So we have a few problems. One, we have to find a universe that has a ZPM. Specifically one that has a ZPM that we can get our hands onto.
Uh-huh.
And so we have to then, so that's step one. So we have to find a universe that has ZPMs.
Yeah. No, so not ZPMs plural.
Or it has a ZPM that we can get.
Yes. Okay.
Now, let's assume that they're relatively close to our SG-1 team and they were thinking through this process.
Yeah.
So what would be the first place you would look? You would look through the multiverse and see if you can find a ZPM or a universe that has tons of ZPMs that you could go and say, hey, can we have one of these?
Right.
Or maybe if you wanted to be a little bit, you know, nefarious, you could go, oh, this one has 1,000 ZPMs. They're not going to miss one. Whoop.
Right. Or you go to the one where the SGC is actually a bunch of fascists and you take it from them.
Or you do that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, that's still stealing.
Yeah, but now it's stealing from the bad guys. That's right.
But, anyway. So what does this mean? This means that they have a means of scanning the multiverse.
Apparently. or they just winged it.
But we've already determined that the way they process things on the... So here's the thing. It's like, I'm just going to pick a random universe in the multiverse and go there and hope they have a working ZPM that I can steal.
Throwing a dart in a room full of dartboards that might not be dartboards.
No. They clearly had a plan. So they scanned the multiverse.
Yeah.
And apparently they could not find the multiverse, the universe that had 1,000 ZPMs that literally nobody is using. But they found our universe and they discovered that we have a ZPM that, to be fair, we found through time travel and multiversal stuff.
That's also true. Yeah, that's right. Yep.
But we didn't actually steal it from ourselves. We just arranged things so that we could discover it.
Yes.
And we are taking it from the Guawuld, who literally had no idea what it was at all.
I mean, it's just win-win-win.
I mean, yeah. So, I mean, anyway. Okay, so they find this one. And they're like, okay, so they have a ZPM. It's currently in Atlantis. So we'll need to get to the SGC, and then we need to find a way to get from SGC to Atlantis. Oh, but okay, so I have scanned this universe enough. They have a ship called the Prometheus. They actually have intergalactic transportation. It's long, it's inconvenient, but it gets the job done. Okay, so now let me check their logs and whatnot. I'm like, oh, okay, so Atlantis, they have this ZPM. Apparently, they're just not using it for much of anything. It's just using it to schlep people quickly to this galaxy. Okay, well, that's clearly a good play. We can take that one. Maybe there's somebody out there who is using their ZPM to save and protect Earth. Okay, well, we wouldn't want to do that because that's exactly what we want to do. But this one, they're just sitting there, not doing anything, in a different galaxy. We can totally take that one. Okay.
Yeah.
So we got to go there and we got to take it. But we need to make sure that we can do this so that we are not recognized, right? So how do we do this? So we need to create a hub so that's not just us, but it's a whole bunch of other SG-1s coming here. And then we can pull on their sympathetic heartstrings so that we're just one of many. Okay. Well, this is a plan. it could work. There's a lot of variables in this plan here. And the complications goes on from there.
Sorry, David.
So, all of this is to say, yes, the black team are bad guys. I mean, I can feel sympathy for what they're dealing with. And, you know, in other circumstances, they, you know, might be, you know, they might not be, quote unquote, always bad guys, right? But what they were doing here is outright theft. And they had a selfish and malicious process. Because they knew that by stealing that ZPM, oh boy, you got me on this. I was trying not to get here, but I'm here, right? They knew that by stealing the ZPM, they would be putting at risk on this universe a significant group of not only humans, but a galaxy and this. And they didn't care. They wanted to take it for their own gain. They're evil.
Hey, Zach.
Yes?
Don't sugarcoat it. Tell us how you really feel. I mean, I'm in your corner. What did David have to say?
Anyway, one more thing. I will say that because this episode is designed to be humorous, they sugarcoat a lot of that, and we get people like, oh, they're just another SG-1 team, and, you know, they're not bad, you know, but no. Well, at the very least, what they're doing is nefarious. Whether they think of it as nefarious or not, it is.
Mm.
This is the type of thing that would get you thrown into a cell for your entire lifetime, because this is espionage.
Yeah. And treason. Yeah. Is it treason if they're not actually part of our...
So it's probably not... It's not treason, it's espionage. but if you get caught doing espionage, you get thrown in jail.
It's still the same consequence.
Forever!
Yeah. So, all
right, anyway.
What does David have to say?
So David asked the question, do you think they were bad guys? He says, I don't think so, nor do I think these guys were bad. They just disagreed with our team.
Uh-huh.
So he predicts Brent will give the 7 chevrons for Frazier.
Oh.
And he says, Zach is going to give it 7 chevrons for Martouf?
Man.
And David concludes with flight is taking off. Yay.
All right. Hopefully it was a safe flight and completely uneventful. This is definitely one of those things where the fans are wrong and I am right. But, you know, hey, good news. I'm wrong every day, too. We're just accelerating this just a little bit, and the millions of people who love it are wrong all at once at the same time. That's just it's just convenient. It's fine. It's all
absolutely
good.
Okay, Brent.
Yes,
it's time to shift gears to next episode
where we can be even wronger.
We'll see what happens. The next episode is entitled Stronghold.
Uh-huh.
And I ask you, what is Stronghold all about?
Stronghold. Next time on Stargate SG-1, the SG-1 team travels through the gate to find themselves in a strange world. It's a world that seems to have seen them before, but they don't remember seeing them the other way around ever. What?
Whoa.
I think we've had an episode where this has happened before. Oh, dear. Also, I'm not really sure where I'm going to go with trying to get to the pun that I thought. And it's also just a terrible pun. Anyway, it doesn't matter. Okay, so they go to the strange new world. They go say, hey, how's it going? Everybody's like, hey, what's up? And they say, we're here to explore. And we're from Earth and everything's great. And everyone around them is like, yeah, we know. How you been? And we're like, excuse me? We don't know who you are. And they're like, whoa, amnesia much? Y'all were like besties with us. Like, we used to be like constantly doing things together, and then all of a sudden you just started ghosting us, and now you're coming in here like, who are you? That's some nerve. And the SG-1 team's like, no, for real, I don't know who you are. And the other guy, the other people are like, whoa, you just need to stop this like right now, because you're about to get punched in the face if you keep this up. And our team is like, holy cow, this is escalating quickly. We just are, I'm sorry, but I don't know who, I'm serious here. And the other people are like, wow, okay, so this is the bit you're gonna stick with? Fine. Hi, I'm Chad. This is Janet. We are new to you, I guess. Why don't you just go back through the gate and not come back here for another 15 years? And now the team's like, I'm sorry, we've only been doing this for like 9. I have no idea what's going on anymore. And it just escalates, and the tension keeps rising, and everything's going wrong, and I have no idea how I'm going to get to a pun where I'm making a joke about age, because I thought to the word, like the word strong and old, and I was going to make something about strong old, but that doesn't work anymore because I don't know where I was going. So how about we just land with, it's a mystery, and it'll all be revealed in the next episode of Stargate SG-1 Stronghold.
So Brent, you know how at the beginning of the podcasts, I try to make some sort of weird stories out of the top 5 movies
most of the time office. Yeah,
and you know, most of the time it works. Some of it doesn't work as well as other times, and sometimes I just like fall on my face and burn. Welcome to the fire, my friend.
I had no idea where I was. See, when I go off and do my little fake little things, I sometimes I have a plan. Often I don't. And I just trust that if I keep talking long enough, see, this is one of the secrets of me as a person. I assume that if I can keep talking long enough, I'll eventually think of something that actually works, and I'll say that.
Well, you know, I can resonate with that a little bit. You either stopped far too soon or far too late. I'm not sure which.
Oh, yeah. Right. No, this was, I got nothing. Stronghold.
But fortunately, we have a promo from David.
Yes.
Now, we do have a preface to the promo.
Okay.
David wrote this. Hi, Zach and Brent and all you listeners. You will notice in this upcoming promo that there are 2 voiceover sections that sound different than usual. I am currently in Arizona, where it is hot and dry. I have been here for the last 3 days doing my job, which involves me talking virtually all work day. I have also been doing this in a factory with bad acoustics, so I have been needing to raise my voice. Needless to say, my voice is a bit rough from all of that. I'm not trying to do a dramatic voice, it's just that I sound, it's just what I sound like tonight at 11 p.m. Thursday night. Adding to that, I'm also in a hotel room with a poor recording environment. With all that, please enjoy my extra dramatic sounding voice in an echo chamber.
Okay, alright. Well, thank you for the preface.
Yeah, okay. So, with all of that, are you ready for the promo?
Yes, I am ready.
I am hitting play now.
Next time on Stargate SG-1.
An outside force is trying to influence the Jaffa High Council.
I'm entitled to be served by reason, Brayjack.
You were the one who tabled this proposal for a referendum. You have always believed democracy was essential for the future of our nation.
Indeed, that is still the case. I have merely been convinced that you should not act in such haste.
Back on Earth, Colonel Mitchell has to deal with a deeply personal challenge.
Come on, we were both up for that big, important classified position. I just wanted to know what I missed out on that almost got you killed.
I wish I could tell you. I really did.
No, you don't. Now, you probably feel guilty as hell that you're doing what you're doing while I'm waiting to die.
Oof. Well, I'm here because I no longer know who I can trust undercover.
Oh, no.
What?
It's all next time on Stargate SG-1.
What?
I will break him, whatever it takes.
Oh no, oh, it's Ball. Boy. Oh no, what are we gonna do?
It's Ball.
Where's his ants?
They're in his pants.
Oh, are they doing a dance?
Oh, they're doing a dance.
And he's going to France.
He is going to France.
But don't take a chance. He's got to look askance.
I'm done.
I am also done. I was trying to think of another one. I'm sure that there are listeners that are like, wouldn't it be great if we could just hear? No, it wouldn't.
But he
because
we
hear all of it at once. Yeah, right. But we'd hear it later. Prance. Yep,
with a man
that's good.
Named Lance.
There we go. That's there's the ticket.
There we go. Okay. Anyway. So this is your I say this every week, right? Tell us what you think, dear listeners.
Yeah.
Tell us where we got it right and where we got it wrong. clearly, all y'all really, really think this is a great episode.
Uh-huh.
And while, you know, I do not lampoon it quite as badly as Brent, I am not, apparently, in the majority here, which is where I usually end up falling. So, tell us what you think about this episode. I would be actually interested in seeing how you would, raise this episode up in our ideas and thoughts for it. So you can do that on the Walking Through the Stargate Facebook page. You can do that in the Discords. The Discord's probably the better place, just because there's more chat that's going on there.
Yes.
You can create a little cabal and, try to take over this endeavor that is Walking Through the Stargate.
Y'all can start your own podcast. Your first episode can be How Brent and Zach Are Wrong.
That's episode of one of however many of we've actually had several walking through the Stargate.
Yes.
So this is like episode 4 or whatever it is.
Yes, yes.
But you can talk about how we're wrong.
Yeah, absolutely.
And then, on a fantastic meta level, I think that would be delightful.
Yeah. I think that the listenership might be a little small.
Maybe. All right. Hey, well, only time will tell.
Yeah, that's true.
Anyway, tell us what you think. Email us at walkingthroughthestargate@gmail.com. Of course, go to the Facebooks, the Twitters, not the Twitters. We don't have Twitters anymore.
Nope, not anymore.
Twitters aren't even Twitters anymore.
Nope. Go
to your exes.
Which is, no thanks.
No, thank you. With all of this, I say I'm Zach.
I'm Brent.
This has been Walking Through the Stargate. See you next time.
Bye.
Dial it up. Get these people
home. Oh, boy.